We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Earlier today, I got on the phone with White Sox GM Rick Hahn, and he had a few minutes, so he gave me a few minutes, and we talked about a lot of things. And if you're a White Sox fan, you need to listen up. But even if you're just a baseball fan, I think you'll get something out of it. And early on, I was doing a little digging. There's some anecdotal evidence, just being at games a little bit more this year as a paying customer, that I thought about and I wanted to share. So I went and did a little bit of research. And when I did some research, I found something kind of interesting when it came to attendance. And I started things off by throwing that at Rick.
I was looking at the attendance today, and the numbers are on average are only down a few hundred. So what does that say to you about the fans' response to the new direction you guys are going in?
You know, I got to be honest with you, Lawrence. I actually did not know what the attendance numbers were for this year before you mentioned that. I think that overall, from what I'm hearing from fans and the volume and tenor of my 2 a.m. voicemails at the office, that overall fans get what we're doing. They are on board. There's a level of enthusiasm about our prospects and where we are in this whole process. I think we're all going to be tested at times. You know, last night was a tough one around here. It was a bit of an ugly game, and there's going to be other nights like that. At the same time, I think fans now are starting to look down at the minor league system, checking in, seeing that Moncada hit a home run last night, that Alec Hansen did a nice job in his first start up there in Winston-Salem. And each night there's a little bit something that gives you a glimmer of what the future may look like, and fans are embracing that.
When an organization makes a decision to go in a direction like this, does that weigh in into how you guys approach it and how you try to sell it?
I think it weighs into us emphasizing the importance for being as transparent as possible and explaining what we're trying to do and why. I think that certainly was a consideration. At the end, there was when the decision was made, we obviously did not know how it was going to be received by the fans. We thought there was a chance that there would be resistance, or fans would be disappointed, or you know, attendance would suffer, or TV ratings would suffer as we went through this process and some of the hardships that are part of it. But that didn't, in the end, deter us from heading down the path. It just emphasized to us, or made it clear, that in order to hopefully get fans on board, we're going to have to be as clear as possible about what we're trying to do and why. And as I said, at least the, you know, 9 out of 10 that I hear from get it and support it and are on board.
If you talked with anyone around baseball, what was the best advice you got about doing a rebuild?
You know, I think it was mostly to that last point about the importance for transparency and doing the best you can to explain why you're going through this. At the same time, as we've gone through it and we've heard some of the excitement and felt some of the excitement, I think it's become important to an extent, manage expectations, make it clear that these are prospects that we're talking about. And unfortunately, not everyone, there's not 100% hit rate on prospects. Not everybody winds up being the player that you might project them to be at age 21 or 22 into the distant future. There's a little bit more art than science to all this. And as a result, you know, progress isn't always going to be linear. And making clear to fans that we get that, and that's part of the reason we're trying to accumulate as much talent as possible to help for that inevitable attrition that happens as part of this process.
I'm in love with trying to figure out teams' process, and like now, like, that's kind of what I'm into. Like, I'm reading about it and thinking about it. So since I have you here, I'm curious, day to day, how much of your time is spent dealing with what's happening in the minors versus what's happening in Chicago?
It varies a little bit by where we are at in the season. Obviously, now we're after the draft, but the 3-4 weeks leading up to the draft, that's pretty well, almost all my time is consumed by what's going on at the big league level, and the day-to-day operations of that, and then lead the amateur scouts being in town and our meetings and our preparation for the draft. Once you get to the other side of the draft, obviously there's very little to do with preparing, for me at least, for next year's draft, although our area scouts have to get right back out there the next weekend, which is unbelievable to me as they start preparing for the 18 draft. But we sort of turned a page here in the office to focus a little bit more on the trade deadline. The volume of calls pick up, and you're spending a fair amount of more time on the phone, whether it be with other clubs or your scouts, trying to get guys in order and find out what's possible and what's not. I would say on a day-to-day basis, there's always this element of focus on the minor leagues, but with Buddy Bell and Chris Getz running it for us, you know, I know it's in good hands, and anytime there's an issue that needs my attention, it's brought to me, but, you know, four times out of five, they handle it no problem. That said, in my spare time, I do find myself, you know, if I'm stuck in traffic or sitting here in a rain delay, I spend more and more of my time, I've noticed this year, going through the minor league box scores or punching into our video feeds down there at the affiliates to check out our guys. It's you know, like I said, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit of the mother's milk of all this whole process here. You get to see how these guys are developing, and it's good for everybody around here to see that and get little glimmers of the future.
What's it mean to you to have Moncada and Kopech in the futures game?
Well, and Zach Collins too. Yeah, we wound up with three guys there, which I think is great, because traditionally, you know, clubs get two, and to have that extra guy is a nice tribute to what those players have accomplished and our scouts and our player development people, and it's a nice, you know, shot in the arm for the organization to be recognized to have that extra player. I think everyone obviously knows of Moncada and his talent. I mean, he was the MVP of the game a year ago, so it's not a real surprise that he's there. Kopech has gotten a lot of notoriety for his ability, and people know a lot about him. I'm probably most pleased that Zach got included in the game, because, you know, you look at Zach's stat line, and the first thing that jumps out is that I think he's hitting about 212, 215 or something like that, and that's, you know, where a lot of people's analysis used to stop. But Zach's in that game because, you know, he's getting on base, he's hitting for power down there, and perhaps the biggest challenge presented to Zach in his first year as a pro was improving himself defensively, and he's done a great job with that. So it's nice to see, you know, a little something behind the batting average and the importance that those things play in evaluating a player getting recognized, and the guy like Zach Collins being included in this game.
When Moncada gets to Chicago, and as I said to you on Monday, I don't want proprietary stuff, but what types of things are you hoping to see from him when he makes his debut?
I mean, there's a few things at the plate and a few things defensively that we talked about with him as he was heading out of big league camp, and that is hit upon fairly regularly by Mark Rezalonik and Andy Tomberlin and the guys working with him down in AAA Charlotte. So there was a little something about his arm slot on the exchange on a double play that he took to very quickly, and we obviously want to see him continue to stick to that alteration, and there's a few things about his setup at the plate that we want to see him stick with. But more importantly, perhaps, than anything with his mechanics or how he's going, how the game's being played between the white lines, part of it is realizing he's a 22-year-old kid who needs to get used to playing every day in the big leagues, and the focus and the scrutiny that comes with playing in the city of Chicago, much less being viewed as the quote-unquote number one prospect in baseball. There's a lot that comes with that, and there's going to be some growing pains along the way, and we want Johan just to go about this business the same way each and every day, prepare properly for the game, and be focused at bat to at bat, and you know, let that natural ability flourish as nothing doesn't let anything obstruct his ability to perform.
On Monday, Jake Berger was over on the south side, and he got to take batting practice. I know that's something that a lot of teams do, but I was watching you, Rick. I was watching you behind the cage, and you were smiling watching this kid. What sold you on him that you said, you know, this is a guy that could be a pillar of our future?
You know, Jake Berger has got this something about him in terms of his personality, which is really what I was mostly laughing about and smiling about and joking around with Jake behind the cage on Monday night. And in terms of his ability, and I was happy, he sort of exhaled a little bit, which I think is where you first saw me chuckle. He hit one out in that first group, and he sort of exhaled a little bit, where he knew he was going to be okay, and he wasn't going to hit them all off the roof of the batting cage, which was the biggest fear of these guys as they, you know, showcase themselves in front of the guys who just drafted him and in front of the big league team, and guys like Frazier giving him a hard time behind the cage. It's a difficult thing for a kid to do. And once he hit one out, he sort of exhaled a little bit and started having fun with it. But he's a kid who, similar to some other players we took in this draft, is a refined, disciplined college hitter who brings a power profile as well as a degree of patience to the plate. And that's the type of players we're trying to add to the organization. Obviously, we like athletic guys. We like guys who can help you both offensively and defensively. And I should note, despite Jake's size and his appearance, this guy was the defensive player of the year in his conference a year ago and won a gold glove for third base play. So he does bring that element to him. But fundamentally, what we were looking for in the last few drafts, and which I think Nick Hostetler and his staff have been able to execute, is we're looking for well-rounded baseball players, guys who know how to play the game, guys who understand the strike zone and are able to fundamentally play the game the right way every day, and not necessarily have you're going to have to project how their tools are going to improve, but instead you project how they're going to be able to, how their skills will be able to perform at the big league level. And Jake brings a lot of things alike at the big league in terms of his tool set. And we feel like, you know, Gavin Sheets, the left-handed bat we took in the second round, is very similar to that, as is the kid Luis Gonzalez we took out of New Mexico, the left-handed center fielder who we took in the third. So it was a little bit of a different draft in terms of the overall talent pool from 2016, but we feel we hit on a lot of our targets this year and certainly pleased with the way it came out.
Talking White Sox baseball with White Sox GM Rick Hahn here on The Score. How do you handle dealing with players that will hear their names be bandied about baseball as the trade deadline gets closer?
You know, it's tough. I'm not going to sugarcoat it because we're dealing with human beings, guys, especially in this age, the age of Twitter, where anyone, even if the player's not doing it, family members are doing it, punching their names into Twitter or seeing on their Google alert that there's names coming up, or, you know, punching up major league trade rumors and seeing their names in the top 50 most likely to be traded this deadline. And you're dealing with human beings who have families, who have, you know, wives that are expecting, or homes that they own in the area that they may have to sell if they're moved. They do, for the most part, what I can do is be as honest as I can be with the agent or with the player when he asks me about where things sit and the likelihood of something happening. Now, obviously, we're not going to give away any strategy or any, you know, specifics, but you are able to sort of guide them a little bit about whether, you know, things are heating up or, you know, just relax and don't worry about this stuff right now. It's more on Ricky and the coaching staff to create the environment where these guys are just able to focus. And I do think for a lot of them, which is what I started to say earlier, is for them, the easiest part of their day is, I think, once, with all due respect, you guys all leave the clubhouse and they're able to close the door and just focus on that night's game and play the game. You know, for those 4 or 5 hours where they're playing the game or preparing for the game in solitude, I think that's easy for them. These guys are used to playing in front of 30,000 people with a third deck and are very skilled at blocking out distractions, and this is just another distraction. Now, when they go home or they're on their way to the ballpark and they're listening to your station and hear speculation, or their wife's calling them saying, hey, I just heard that you know so-and-so team's interested in you, as human beings, it's only going to affect them. But I do think that part of their gift is when they're inside the clubhouse, they're able to block it out.
Can you walk me through how an organization comes together to add a player like Luis Robert? Because it would seem that it has to be everyone from scouting all the way up to the owner have to be on board with this.
Oh yeah, and then that's not the kind of thing that happens overnight. That was a very long process. In fact, Marco Patti, our head of international operations, and I have been talking for years, not about Luis Robert per se, but about what we want to try to accomplish internationally. And when Marco took over, we didn't have much of an infrastructure down there, much of a presence in Latin America. And for the first few years, we didn't want to devote all of our international resources to one or two players and perhaps even suffer a penalty and be restricted on what we can sign in the future, because we had to build up a critical mass of talent down there. You know, that's what got us the Mike Rodolfos of the world, and unfortunately the kid I traded away and Fernando Tatis has become a nice young player for San Diego. But we wanted year in, year out to sort of build up that critical mass. Part of that were conversations with Marco saying, hey, when the time comes, when it's time to step out on a guy and suffer the penalties, let us know in advance so you can speak up and get this thing going and talk to Jerry and you know, economically get things in order where they need to be. And about, I don't know, maybe November, December, it blurs together a little bit, Marco spoke up and said, look, Luis Robert's coming over, and this is the type of guy who's worth the penalty. This is the type of guy where if we got to sit out internationally for a couple of years, it's worth it. And if this is the guy that I need to stake my name on and my reputation on, this is the type of guy I'd want to do it on. And those conversations with Jerry, telling him this was coming and here's the projected cost, you know, those start right around the winter meetings and first of the year. And then come spring training, once it was clear that Luis was going to be available this period, Jerry was fully involved. Jerry was very focused on it. He called me a few nights during spring training just to talk about Luis and where things were and what our plan was. And then ultimately, once his representatives laid out the process, you know, other elements of the organization got involved. We talked about this, you know, video we made that involved, you know, Ricky and Jose Abreu and Moncada and Michael Anoa, who knows them, in terms of explaining who we are as an organization and the city of Chicago and our history and why he fits and why we want him. And there were people in the marketing department and the PR department involved in that and really putting together the best way we could represent ourselves as an organization. When Kenny and Marco and I finally had a chance to sit down with Luis and start recruiting him. So it was that's a long-winded answer, but it took several months to lead up to getting that player, and a lot of different disciplines within the organization had to be involved all the way up to the top.
How is a Cuban player's development from an American player's, a Venezuelan player's? It just seems like there's such a cultural divide still that it can be delicate.
It's delicate. It is delicate. And obviously, you know, knock on wood, we've had some success with the Cuban players over the years. And part of that is the environment we're able and support we're able to provide them once they get into the system. But it's a huge cultural change for these players. And the Latin players, the Dominican or Venezuelan players, they generally, when they sign at a very young age, 16 or 17, start off in our academy in the Dominican and slowly work their way up with their peer group through the system. A kid like Robert, who's 19 years old and a little bit more advanced physically and from a tool standpoint, you know, ultimately he's going to join at some point in the next year. He'll obviously join an affiliate in the States and probably at a little bit higher placement than a lot of these kids. So he's going to have the cultural adjustment, not just to a new country, but, you know, new teammates that he's not used to, not obviously speaking the language or knowing exactly how everything functions in terms of where to eat and how to go about paying for things and all sorts of off-the-field things that many players don't have to deal with. And it is a challenge. And we are ready to provide Luis all the same support that we've had in the past with other guys and also know some of the pitfalls we hit along the way. I mean, I think I shared during an earlier press conference that Alexei Ramirez on his first game in the big leagues, I think we were on the road opening at Cleveland, his pregame meal was two Krispy Kreme donuts with some mayonnaise in between, and made it into a little sandwich for himself. So, you know, we might, at that point, we needed to mix in a little nutritional education into Alexei's world, and that's something now we know early on, we've got to pay a little attention to on the way up when you're developing these guys.
I'd heard the stories about it, because you know I'm a big donut dude. Like, I love donuts. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that, I threw up in my mouth a little bit. I'm not going to lie, but I do understand. Like, I get the concept of the salty sweet together. Just for me, that is questionable on Alexei's part.
I might be wrong, but I think he hit a home run that day too.
Really?
So I think, I'm not certain. So it's a little tough to take that away from him if that's what you're pre-gaming with and having success. But ultimately, we got that out of him. And you saw from Alexei, it obviously made zero impact on his waistline or his physique.
Absolutely. He could be on a 10,000 calorie a day diet and still even be skinny. I've been reading this book called Everybody Lies, and it's really interesting. It's about big data. And baseball has become a place where we're looking at so much data and trying to figure out who the next great player is, how to construct a team, how to construct a lineup. I'd love to know, with so much data in baseball to sift through, how do you and the White Sox, how have you evolved in working through it?
Well, we've hired some smart people to help, and we've done a lot of our interaction with big data is asking questions. What in terms of can you tell me X? And we've got some real smart people, including a guy named Matt Koenig, who sort of heads up our for lack of a better description, our big data analysis, our StatCast work, and other advanced information systems that we're involved with. And he works along with Daniel Zion and Dan Fabian and others in our office to sort of cull through what's there and then see if he can answer some of the questions. Because, you know, a lot of what you're trying to get at is stuff that we've been trying to answer for years just using different mechanisms. You know, for generations, guys have been asking their scouts, has he lost a step to his left? Well, now you can use some data to actually quantify if that's true or not. It's the same question. You're still trying to learn about a player's development or regression or where he needs to improve. You just have a lot more information available now. And we're all still, you know, I like seeing stuff on Twitter about this is the, you know, hardest hit ball in the StatCast era, which, you know, goes all the way back to 2015. That's mm-hmm. That's how new all this stuff is. So we're still, you know, feeling your way and learning what the information is out there, but we certainly know it's powerful. And the more that we're able to gather at the big league level, the minor league level, the amateur level, hopefully the stronger our decisions will be because of them.
Last thing I got for you. Why is Avi Garcia having success?
Good question. I think there's a lot of contributing factors. I think there is everything ranging from the physical. He did come in, you know, 15 to 20 pounds lighter, which helps, you know, his mobility, helps his foot speed, which has contributed to some improvement we've seen defensively and certainly has helped him beat out a couple infield hits or get that extra base. I think there's some to the psychological approach. I think that even in last year when he would struggle at times, he still had this ridiculous performance when the game was on the line. I think close and late with man on second or something, he hit like 420 or something, that somewhere along those lines. In key situations, he was always coming through. Bases loaded last year in a tie game, he'd take a walk, which was something that obviously wasn't much of Avi's game last year. And we've had conversations with him. Like, that's the approach that you have in those situations. You need to have four or five times a night. We're not asking that much. Instead of doing it once when it's close and late, you got to do it four or five times. Now, there's some mechanical things, too, that Trick has worked on with him, that Todd Steverson, our hitting coach, has worked on with him, that I think Avi has embraced a little bit more, and you've seen some improvement because of that at the plate. And then lastly, I think, you know, he's been told this is kind of the shot. You know, you had 1,500 plate appearances to show who you were before, and a lot of organizations would not have given you another opportunity, given where we are as an organization as a whole and given what we believe is your talent. You're going to get this opportunity, but this is the time. You got to make the most of it. And, you know, there's a lot of people around here who fought hard for Avi to get this shot. Kenny is high on that list. Kenny was always fighting for Avi to believe that the talent was going to eventually match the performance. And thus far, we've been rewarded for that faith.
Rick, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for jumping on the show. It's good to have you on the show because I got to tell you, White Sox fans, I haven't seen them this peaceful or at peace since 2006. Mm-hmm. It's weird, and I think it's a good thing.
No, it's a good thing. We got to get them that peace again because for the same reason they were in 2006. That's the goal. Get them back to that level of peace.
Well, thanks a lot, Rick. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet, Lawrence. Thanks for having me.
White Sox GM Rick Hahn joining us here on The Score. If you'd like to react to what he had to say, 312-644-6767. Take a break. I got some thoughts on it, too. Back after this on The Score.
If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions you want answered to cbschicago.com/legaladvice. Or you can look online for free Legal Fridays with Horwitz, Horwitz & Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legaladvice. It's fun to watch the reaction to an interview while the interview is going on. It's like one of the cool things about having recorded an interview that I can focus in on your reaction to what's happening. And taking a look at your text messages during the Rick Hahn interview, it's cool because Cubs fans that listen to Rick Hahn have the same reaction that I have when I listen to Theo. And the great part is that none of us has to be jealous anymore. You know what I mean?
like, man, I wish you had that guy. You know, it's kind of fun to hear people just appreciate thoughtful baseball conversation. And I think that we're lucky in Chicago that we've got a bunch of guys that can satisfy that for you. They can scratch that itch for you. I can listen to Theo or Jed or Rick talk baseball for hours. And trust me, if I could convince Rick to like sit down for, I would need, like, you know, ordinarily we usually cap folks here at an hour on the nighttime show. Like, we bring people in for an hour. We feel like that's a good representation. I would need a minimum of 2 hours of airtime to like delve into a lot of stuff that I want to delve into with Rick. You heard me at the beginning of the interview talk about the numbers of attendance. And being that I am a season ticket holder now. Oh, by the way, I give out my tickets a lot. Usually via Instagram, as weird as that may sound. So if you're on Instagram and you're a White Sox fan, you should be following me because I'm just like, hey, I can't go to the game this week. Who wants my tickets? And there were three nice guys. I'll get back on board in a second. But there were when they had Charles Tillman bobblehead night a couple weeks ago, I think it was June 14th when they had it, I got some bobbleheads. I got three of them. It's Charles in a White Sox jersey holding a football. And so I gave away three of the bobbleheads and three pairs of my tickets to people who donated to his Cornerstone Foundation. And I really appreciate that. So it's a way that, you know, you can help a really good organization. You get something out of it. The bobbleheads, which I think there were only like 1,000 made. So you get that and you get some free tickets to go see a game. So it's a very, very cool thing. So if you want to follow me, I had my rep at the White Sox, shout out to Mike Short, do the percentage of tickets, like how many games I've been to or people using my tickets have been to. And it's been 80%, which is high. It's really high, but it's great. And part of the reason that I got the tickets was to give them away. But I noticed when I went to games that there were more people at games than I expected. Because you're in a rebuild, and I'm sitting there going, oh, there's a lot of people here. Now, the Burley thing, and if you went to the Burley thing, I was watching it on television, and it was beautiful. I will say, it's time to do the Ozzie thing. Like, that needs to happen next. But the whole thing was beautiful. His son singing the national anthem. And he's going to look back on that one day and be like, my voice was that high at one point. His daughter throwing out the first pitch and the White Sox busting his stones saying his daughter throws 85 and he throws 79. I mean, it was a really good day. So I said, man, it feels like there are a lot more people at games than you would expect because they are in an admitted rebuild. So I looked at the numbers. The average attendance last year for White Sox games was 21,559. The average attendance this year is 20,976. That's without the Cubs games in there and without this last Yankees game in there. So not a bad way to get things going if you're the White Sox. Anyway, seeing people react to Rick and saying, man, I really like that guy, even though I'm a Cubs fan. I think there are a lot of White Sox fans that can put themselves in your shoes. Because when you hear Theo, you go, wow, like that dude. You hear Jed, you're like, wow, these are smart dudes who get it. And I'm glad that the White Sox that they put Rick out there because he's really good at the messaging. And now that the White Sox are in this era where they're going to try. I actually think it's going to happen a little quicker than maybe most people expect with them. Don't hold them to my expectation, but I think it's going to happen a little bit faster when they're back in contention. That you have a guy that you trust, that you listen to him and what he says makes sense. And that's not always the case with people who run teams here in Chicago. There was a beautiful story that happened around baseball yesterday that you need to hear about. And I thought that we did a tremendous job of covering it. I'll share that with you next here on The Score.
At 9 o'clock, we're going to talk some Bulls. Joe Cali, a.k.a. Mr. Handsome, is going to join me. He was at the Jimmy Butler press conference. He's got some stuff, as he always does.
I always love talking with Joe. That's my man. If you haven't heard, there's a really great story that happened in Pittsburgh yesterday. The outcome of it was great. The circumstances leading up to it, not so much. There was a young woman who was on the Roberto Clemente Bridge, and it looked like she was going to jump. And so a passerby goes up to her and checks on her to see if she's okay and grabs her to make sure that she doesn't jump in. Other bystanders helped out in that regard. Someone called the police and, you know, have emergency medical people there to try and help out. It's a tense situation, but there wasn't a lot of yelling and screaming. The guy who grabbed this woman's arm and kind of talked her down was an umpire who was umping the game last night named John Tumpane. He's from here. He went to St. Lawrence High School. He's a 34-year-old guy. And the whole story is remarkable. It's beautiful when you really think about it. Someone taking their time to try and help someone who's having a terrible day. Trying to help someone who's probably having the worst day of their life. And being able to recognize that, and not just being able to recognize that, but then putting that into action with a tremendous amount of compassion. I thought that our guys did a great job. I know Jay Zawoski is a very proud St. Lawrence alum, and I don't know if that helped him to get Tumpane on the Spiegel and Parkin show. But this story, we live, to quote Jerry Maguire, in a cynical world. Things are so ugly right now in a lot of different respects. I was reading a book today that talked about positive news versus negative news and how even though we think if it bleeds, it leads, that actually the opposite is true and that people do react to positive stories. And this one's great. Tumpane was on the Spiegel and Parkin show talking about what happened. You need this for your soul.
Anonymity is often the goal of the umpire, right? What was it? What's it like for you now being in the spotlight for something like this?
I'm just glad I could be a part of a good story. Even taking umpiring out of this, and it was just a fluke that this even all got broadcasted the way it did. There happened to be a lady that worked for the Post Gazette here in Pittsburgh that happened to be walking on the bridge at the same time, or roughly around the same time, and she had snapped a couple photos as the lady was put on the stretcher, and I was kind of talking to her. And as I then walked away from the scene, she just grabbed me and said that she had taken a few photos on the scene after the things kind of calmed down and asked for, you know, more to the story. And I filled her in, and she asked if I was just a local to Pittsburgh or if I was on my lunch break. And I said, actually, I'm here to work. I'm here for Major League Baseball. I'm an umpire and work a Pirates game here in a few hours. And one thing led to the next, and she got a hold of the beat writer for the Pirates, and this all came together. And then during the game, about the fifth inning, the first responder, or I guess second, the guy right behind me that grabbed her arm, he came down behind the backstop about the fifth inning because I was working behind the plate, and he called out my name, and he's like, John. And he's like, he pointed at himself, like, you remember me? And I was like, he's like, you didn't tell me you did this. And I said, hey, we just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And I walked over and just was able to give him a ball and thanked him that, you know, we were part of a positive story and a positive ending. And then the gentleman that, grabbed her feet to the down below the rails, I met him after the game. He worked for the Tampa Bay Rays on the broadcast department. And he came, you know, he was outside our locker room after the game. He said he just wanted to, you know, thank me, and I'm glad we had a positive story to be a part of. You know, we both all just jumped in there and did what we thought we had to do. And then, so three people that saw each other on the bridge at 3 in the afternoon had no idea who each other were. And then at between 7 and 10, we all kind of regathered ourselves at PNC Park and, got to meet each other, after that. And obviously a sigh of relief.
Yeah. Well, that's also beautiful though, because you guys have that kind of bond together. You know that you're the kind of people, all three of you, that will respond like that in a moment, mm-hmm. like that. It's good to hear stories like this, because sometimes the kindness and the generosity of strangers like you in that moment, that's more than some people might be getting from family or friends. You know, it's good to hear, and it's important to get out there. So I'm glad the story got out in that way.
Yeah, and I hope, you know, as many people that reached out to me, I hope that, you know, I know it's, the story wasn't about me yesterday. I'm glad we were able to save her, you know, yesterday, but the story was more, you know, about her and her life continuing. And I hope that as much support as all of the guys that helped got, I hope, you know, she has the family and friend support that she needs. And this turns out to be a, you know, a turnaround for her and a better day than yesterday, for sure.
Kind of probably puts things in perspective when Andrew McCutchen is arguing balls and strikes later on in the night.
Yeah. It, you know, it makes you, you know, standing there between innings looking at that bridge.
That's what I was thinking. Like, that bridge is right in your face when you're umpiring that game.
Yeah, you look at it the whole game, and, you know, I'd be lying if I said it didn't cross my mind throughout the game. But thankfully it was a positive memory of that bridge and not a one that would be a tough one to live with.
It's
it was a memorable day, but I'm glad it ended the way it did for everybody involved.
That was John Tumpane, the umpire from the area, went to St. Lawrence High School, who was the guy on the spot yesterday and, at least for now, saved someone's life. And we don't know what's happened with the young lady since she got medical treatment. The hope is that this allows her to get some help, to get some support, but it's incredibly honorable what this guy did and what the other people around him did to help, that they did something to help someone in need. And it kind of recharges your battery, because I think that over the last few years, we've grown accustomed to thinking the worst of each other. And it's nice when we see, like, the best of each other, like, come out. That instead of ignoring someone who is in pain, we see someone go out of their way to be there. And more than anything, just to be there to listen and hear someone struggle and give them the time of day to help them. It's a really powerful, moving story. I thought our guys with the interview, I was listening to the interview today walking around, I thought our guys did a great job with it. And I think we need to understand that all of us have the ability to do that. Maybe not to that degree or in that situation, because it takes special people, and, you know, first responders, when you talk about running into danger and the danger that John and those other people put themselves in to help someone else. But in small ways, we can do more. And I'm encouraged that the guys did such a great job with the interview. It was terrific. The whole interview is up on SpiegelandParkins.com. 670thescore.com. I think we all honestly needed that. I really, truly do. This segment on The Score is being brought to you by Drug or Alcohol. The Detox and Treatment Helpline. Drug or alcohol problems for you or a loved one can be solved, and with insurance, treatment may be at little or no cost to you. Call the Detox and Treatment Helpline now at 800-430-4149. It's also being brought to you by the Knee and Back Pain Helpline. Learn how an insurance-covered comfortable knee or back brace can reduce your pain.
Call 800-888-KNEE, 800-888-KNEE. Joe Cali joins me next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.